affair. Today, they'll discuss all the madness sweeping the media surrounding Russian involvement in hacking the U.S. election. Then at 10 o'clock today, we'll have an hour-long Flashpoints. Chris Andre not making it in this morning, so join us for Dennis Bernstein bringing you a weekly stolen election update with Greg Pallas, plus a new speech from consumer advocate, author, and former Green Party presidential candidate Ralph Nader. And then at 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman welcomes author Sophia Samatar to discuss her latest work, The Winged Histories. That is all coming up this morning. Stick around. Press Watch is next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Buyer and Seller, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs from November 25th through December 17th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. Buyer and Seller, the story of an underemployed Los Angeles actor who goes to work in Barbara Streisand's Malibu, California basement, allowing for delicious wit and commentary on the solitude of celebrity, the love-hate attraction between gay men and divas, and the melancholy that lurks beneath narcissism. Again, that's Buyer and Seller, November 25th through December 17th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information may be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I'm going to start off today with some fake news. Just a little bit of fake news that I want to ask you to keep in mind, and I'll go back to it in just a minute. It's from AP in the Washington Post, and it reads like this. Republican Donald Trump's victory in Wisconsin has been reaffirmed following a presidential recount that showed him defeating Democrat Hillary Clinton by more than 22,000 votes. Trump picked up a net 162 votes as a result of the recount that the Wisconsin Election Commission certified Monday. Green Party candidate Jill Stein requested and paid for the recount that began December 1st. But after recounting nearly 3 million ballots, little changed. The final results changed by fewer than 1,800 votes. Stein has also tried to get statewide recounts in Michigan and Pennsylvania, but the courts have stopped them. The federal deadline to certify the vote is Tuesday. Wisconsin's recount uncovered no widespread problems or hacking, as Stein has suggested, without evidence that there might be. So you got that? That's the corporate line. It is absolutely propaganda, as I will demonstrate piece by piece. First, turning to Jill2016.com and quoting Jill Stein's spokespersons, with the recount finished in Wisconsin, "We applaud the countless workers and observers who helped ensure a full recount throughout the state. We, however, remain disappointed that not all counties conducted a full hand recount, which is considered the gold standard." Now, I'll speak for myself here. The reason a hand recount was necessary was that the machines were set so that through overspeeding or under application of the vacuum device, the ballots were not properly counted. And this led to some amazingly large discarded piles of ballots. So when you hear that there was no hand recount, what you should be hearing is that there was no recount, really. Returning to the article While we were able to beat back efforts by Trump and the GOP to stop the recount, the refusal by some of the largest and most important counties in the state to conduct a hand recount undermined the ability to get an accurate recount. In fact, Milwaukee County, the largest and most socioeconomically, racially, and ethnically diverse county in the state, in other words, where the black people live, declined a hand recount. And given the discoveries in Michigan, it is imperative to examine if voters in that county encountered machine errors, manipulations, and voter issues on election day, end quote. Under the category Michigan, while serving as challengers, volunteers observed several breakdowns and shortcomings in the recount process. Many precincts were deemed not recountable. Let me say that again. Many precincts were deemed not recountable because of improper seals, or broken containers. Many precincts were also deemed not recountable because the numbers recorded on the seals did not match the numbers of ballots in the containers or the numbers recorded on the poll sheets. In some instances, local clerks would make an effort to discern why the numbers did not match, while in many instances, local clerks or their staff would make limited or no effort and would simply deem the precinct not recountable. Again, these were black precincts. Many election administration staff members who were responsible for the counting ballots, were not trained sufficiently and were not knowledgeable of voting and counting rules, which slowed down the process and caused inaccurate counts in precincts deemed not recountable when those precincts could have been recounted. Quoting Greg Pallas, Trump, for example, in Michigan won by less than 11,000 votes. It looks like we had about 55,000 voters, mostly minorities, removed by this racist system called cross-check. And speaking for myself, they were removed because, of course, they would overwhelmingly have voted against Trump. In addition, Pallas writes, you had a stoppage. Even before the courts ordered the complete stop of the vote in Michigan, you had the Republican state officials completely sabotage the recount. They said in Detroit, where there were 75,335 supposedly blank ballots for president, and speaking for myself again, that's where you speed up the machine to screw up the ballot. They said that you couldn't count 59% of the precincts where most of the votes were missing. There were 87 machines in Detroit that didn't function. And speaking for myself again, these were the black precincts. They were supposed to count about 1,000 ballots each. You're talking about a massive blockade of the black vote in Detroit and Flint. Enough votes undoubtedly to overturn that election. Also from Jill2016.com, the Stein campaign said it was disappointed in the federal court ruling last Monday, blocking a statewide hand recount and forensic audit of Pennsylvania's error-prone electronic voting machines, effectively disenfranchising millions of Pennsylvanian voters, especially communities of color. The decision by U.S. District Judge Paul Diamond follows a lawsuit filed by the Stein campaign that read, the state's incomprehensible, labyrinthine, and impossibly burdensome election regime is a disaster for ordinary voters. Pennsylvania votes counted accurately? That truth is not difficult to learn. Simply count the paper ballots in optical scan districts and permit forensic examination of the voting systems in touch screen districts. Pennsylvania's election system is stacked against voters. Both the technology by which voters cast ballots, as well as the Byzantine and burdensome laws determining recounts in the state, are a national disgrace. That's according to Jill Stein, who said the process underway in Pennsylvania is hardly an effective or a comprehensive recount. Despite citizens across the state stepping up and demanding their right to verify the vote, every obstacle imaginable, legal, bureaucratic, and political, has been thrown in their face. Pennsylvanians' constitutional and civil rights to have their votes, to have their voices heard and their votes counted, have been stripped right from under them. The recounts have begun to expose a modern-day electoral Jim Crow, said Stein. Counting the ballots has raised even more questions about the vulnerability of voting technology, the improper handling of ballots, and the quality of the election administration. By blocking the recount and suppressing exposure of these problems, Donald Trump and his allies in Pennsylvania are not just perpetuating but actively defending the disenfranchisement of people of color. Approximately two-thirds of voting in Pennsylvania is done through the direct record electronic touchscreen machines, which are susceptible to manipulation and hacking. And in fact, many states have banned or are phasing out the use of DRE, direct record electronic touchscreen machines, over security concerns. Worse, the machines do not dispense any paper ballot or receipt, leaving no evidence of the voting trail, something one election expert called a nightmare scenario. As a result, the only way to conduct a full foolproof audit is through a forensic analysis, where cybersecurity experts and computer scientists go into the black box of DRE machines and look for malware, bugs, or manipulated software or files. But local courts in Pennsylvania have repeatedly denied Stein campaign requests for such an analysis. The remaining one-third of voting in Pennsylvania was done through optical scan ballots, which are also vulnerable to problems and errors, the sort that I mentioned just a couple minutes ago. Computer scientists, they write, regularly warn against the vulnerability of these machines, including that they can be breached without detection and are prone to errors, including a tendency to misread markings made by voters. In Detroit alone, 87 optical scan machines broke on Election Day this year. Substantial research, including U.S. Civil Rights Commission report, finds that voters of color are at massively increased risk of having their votes misread or simply tossed out by badly maintained and poorly calibrated scanning machines in underserved communities. America's voting machines and optical scanners are prone to errors and susceptible to outside manipulation. That's according to J. Alex Halderman, one of the nation's leading cybersecurity experts and a professor of computer science. So I could go on, but the bottom line is that there was no recount in the sense that there was not a case in any of the three states in which all of the ballots were actually counted. There was no recount in the sense that 75,000 votes in one place, dozens of precinct boxes in other places, anywhere black people voted. It turned out that the machines broke down, like I said, 87 of them. The 75,000 of the ballots didn't have a presidential election selected, didn't have a selection of the presidential election, and on and on and on. And on top of that, the recount efforts were swarming with Republican lawyers, people who were there report that everything was being obstructed. And by these people in Brooke Brothers suits who seemed to have endless time and money, there were constant attempts to get the courts to shut down the recount before it could even get started. What little was done was stunted. There was no recount. So now let me read that AP article again. And now that you've heard the real news, AP and Washington Post say Republican Donald Trump's victory in Wisconsin has been reaffirmed following a presidential recount that showed him defeating Democrat Hillary Clinton by more than 22,000 votes. Trump picked up a net 162 votes as a result of a recount that Wisconsin Election Commission certified Monday. Green Party candidate Jill Stein requested and paid for the recount that began December 1st. Again, this is the propaganda from the Washington Post and AP. But after recounting nearly 3 million ballots, little changed. The final results changed by fewer than 1,800 votes. And they end with Wisconsin's recount uncovered no widespread problems or hacking, as Stein had suggested, without evidence that there might be. So by reading that at first and afterwards, after giving you the details on just how corrupt and uncounted the votes were, the details on how, frankly, Trump, who lost the popular vote, also stole the electoral votes in these three states, how illegitimate this election is, I want you to understand just how thick the propaganda is from AP, Washington Post, and corporate-owned media. When I say that corporate-owned media are there to control you, this is the sort of thing I'm talking about. Just absolutely coming out with the opposite of the truth and saying it over and over and over, using their legitimacy and their connections with corporate America, who have the power over you, to make you start repeating it and say, oh, that recount, that was a waste of time. Oh, that was silly. Not even close to the truth. Now, but to be realistic, I'm broadcasting to you on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and this is a pretty small audience. I mean, it's a big community radio audience, but it's a small audience. And we have to understand, you and I have to understand, that as things stand now, what people think is the truth is that there was a recount and it didn't find anything, and it was just a silly waste of time. And now you just go somewhere with your information, whether you got it from me or whether you dug it up and got the details yourself, and you memorized those 87 broken machines and those 75,000 bogus votes, And the interstate cross-check with 55,000 people, all of these people in black districts, kicked out from voting in the first place. And you tell people by the numbers it's impossible that Trump won the election either in the electoral vote. And of course, we know that he lost the election in the popular vote. And therefore, that he is an illegitimate president. And you will get a lot of guff. You'll get a lot of backlash. And you will get people calling you a conspiracy theorist and saying that you're falling for fake news. This is because this is the way chimps act. And when I say chimps, I mean people who have devolved to the level of chimps by not using their brains. I'm being a little insulting. But you'll get a lot of chimp attitude if you try to tell the truth. So we have to deal with this. We have to deal with the fact that whatever the truth is, wherever it is in opposition to the establishment, frankly, wherever it is in established, wherever it is in opposition to the smooth running of our corporate capitalist system, it will be denied and people will be brainwashed and you will suffer if you try to bring up the truth. This doesn't mean that you can't use the truth. I want you to remember it. This is the useful part of this. I want you to remember these details, remember where you can find them, understand that Trump's election was illegitimate, and that should give you some strength to move forward, because we do need to move to a general strike. And it's about the general strike that I want to talk. I want to invite your calls, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I have some headlines, and we'll invite your calls. Let's talk about the general strike. I want to propose that instead of being defeated and scattered people on January 20th, that instead we all participate in a gigantic demonstration, possibly the largest the nation has ever seen. Something that's being set up from coast to coast right now, which will include everything from dancing in the streets to potlucks to power shutoffs at certain times. You know, we'll all participate in shutting off our house power at, say, 9 a.m. in the morning, this sort of thing. It's going to be suddenly discovering that you're too sick. Doctor, it's my eyes. I can't see going to work. It's going to be walking off the job for those of you who are bolder. It's going to be a day of relaxation and partying and marching and demonstration and militancy and solidarity and satisfaction on a huge, huge scale. January 20th, 2017. It's going to be the day that we inaugurate the massive resistance to this illegitimately propped up little tyrant and his nasty Nazis and his nasty Klansmen that want to support him so bad. January 20th is the day we start the new American Revolution. So with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, and Amy is on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Am I on?
You are on.
Okay, great. I just wanted to see if you had any ideas about the general strike that you talk about. I go to school out of state. Well, I do between January and the end of July, and it's a pretty conservative school. It's a little bit hard. There isn't going to be anything organized. I asked one of my friends after the election if there was any protests in the town or anything, and there weren't, and I wonder if you have any ideas of what I might be able to do. I mean, I have thought a little bit about trying to organize a walkout, but I mean, it sounds like a pretty big endeavor.
Well, if you're trying to get a degree from a conservative university, then you have a tight spot. You might choose to do something different, like going out without telling any of the wrong people and just swiftly doing some wheat pasting, putting up some posters so you can help people understand that there is a nationwide general strike. There's a lot of things you can do, and the things that you can do will begin to multiply as you hear other suggestions from other groups. There'll be many groups organizing this. I've found a few as I look online, and they have different tactics. So if you can't, you know, of course, anybody could just happen to get sick on that day.
Yeah. And do you think that that would be worthwhile? Like, because I thought about that. Like, we could end up I have a twin sister who goes there too, and we could end up organizing something really small. But like, would it be pathetic to just have a couple people, you know, missing class or anything, or do you think going there and like wearing a t-shirt or something?
Anything you're doing can't be pathetic because it is part of the national movement. It is part of something that the world will be watching, because what would truly be pathetic would be for you to have to look back at your life and say, I had this opportunity to take a stand against this global destroying fascism, and I did nothing, absolutely nothing, because I was afraid. So I would say, find a thing or a couple of things that you can do and do that, and you'll find some satisfaction out of that. Yeah. For most of us, it'll be a lot easier. Thank you for calling in.
Bye.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Talking about the general strike, what it's going to look like, who wants to organize it. There needs to be several cores of organization. And so here on KBOO, I've decided to be a sort of cheerleader for the general strike. I've gotten myself a little black notebook, and I've started contacting people, and I've been rather successful so far, what little I've done. People are enthusiastic about this idea, and it's definitely going to happen. I can say here in Portland, LJ is on the air.
Well, good morning, Teresa. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Really good. I'm feeling very, very optimistic.
All right.
Okay, just a couple of quick points. Do you think seeing what we're seeing with Trump's pick of cabinet people and advisors, can we say in truth and in fact that this was actually a coup d'etat?
Well, it's a stolen election, and so a stolen election is technically a coup d'etat, but I guess it's more accurate and more useful to call it a stolen election. It's certainly an illegitimate taking of power, because, you know, by the numbers, this is a small minority of the American people who are enthusiastic about this sort of thing. I mean, in addition, they propose rule on the basis of violation of international law, and we can't tolerate it. So,
okay, and just another quick thing. Can I refer your audience to the 1968 French Revolution?
Oh, yeah, there's something to study.
And that would be something to study. That's a real good model. It was in May of 1968. It got to the point where Charles de Gaulle, who was president of France, had to leave France to go to Germany to figure out what to do. You can find out all of the information that you need about the 68 French Revolution on your geek machine.
That makes sense. Yeah,
okay,
CCA France.
And that's a real good model, because as it ended up, 11 million French people decided not to go to work.
And ever since then, the French have had to understand that there is a strength on the left, and they have to understand how far things can go when they try to blow it off.
Yep. So anyway, just those two things. And anyway, Teresa, keep on keeping on. Fight the good fight. We're all in this together.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in. As the great day of resistance to the inauguration of the fascist administration grows closer, Radio Havana reminds us that the U.S. has a history of repressing dissent. The administration of Barack Obama has released a CIA report on Operation Condor, the 1970s covert action to rid U.S.-based dictatorships of progressive opponents, or to topple progressive governments outright in South America. If you ever wonder what happened to Victor Jara, well, he had his hands broken by a rifle just before they shot him to death. But his voice still goes on, doesn't it? According to a press release announcing the documents, the National Security Archive, an independent non-governmental research institute and library in Washington, D.C., said the CIA disclosures are among 500 pages on repression in Argentina during the military dictatorship in that country beginning in 76. According to the archive, another proposal under study included the collection of material on the membership, location, and political activities of human rights groups in Argentina in order to identify and expose their socialist and Marxist connections. Similar data reportedly are to be collected on religious and third world groups, the documents said. Amnesty International is one of the groups named in the documents. We're talking about the repression, the U.S.-supported suppression in Argentina that went down in the 1970s. In the 1978 document, Argentino's Alfredo Bravo President of the Permanent Assembly for Human Rights, was tortured. He was subjected to a bucket treatment where his feet were held in a bucket of ice water until thoroughly chilled and then shoved into a bucket of boiling water. The State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research reported that six Southern Cone nations, which were participants in counterterrorist network Code Condor, had agreed to undertake the liquidation of Latin American targets living in France at that time. Dispatching hit teams to London was also under consideration. So I bring this up because that was then, but that was us. And when it comes to repressing dissent, the U.S. has been the expert for a long, long time. And many, many people were disappeared. Women were beaten to death and thrown out of helicopters, and their babies given to nice Catholic families. That's the sort of thing that can happen if you don't resist fascism. And that's why I say that we must have a general strike on January 20th, 2017. And we will have a general strike. And I'm calling you to say what you think you can do, or who you might know that is enthusiastic about shutting down things, everything. No buying, no working, just a day for us on January 20th, in which we back off fascism. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and Sunny is on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Thank you, Teresa, as always, for your very lively discussion or information, the way you present it. You're a smart guy. You know, I remember Chile. Early on, the people that were protesting Pinochet would go out into the streets for just 10 minutes at a time and beat on pots and pans, and perhaps during the time that he's taking his inaugural pledge or whatever, people could just go out for 10 minutes and beat the heck out of their pots.
Well, I like that.
But the problem is, too, that I feel that the level of surveillance and oppression is upon us so heavily that any sort of acting up beyond too much more than the very peaceable protests, largely very, very peaceable protests, this cadre coming in is just, they're just salivating for the opportunity to jump on people because he does say he likes torture.
Which is exactly why we all have to do it together. And that's why we have to stand together. That's why we have KBOO radio, really. I mean, this is a community that looks after itself. I mean, sometimes that's literally true. I'm thinking of someone who was taken in by police a few months back, and commentators got on KBOO radio and started calling her name and saying, you know, you cannot take her. She was being held without charge for a little bit. And suddenly she reappeared. And I do think it had to do with the fact that the radio station wasn't going to tolerate having someone disappeared. Now, we have to stand together. And you're right. It doesn't matter how small it is. I mean, a lot of the people who were tortured to death, some of those people who were thrown out of helicopters in Chile, they were known to someone, or they were beloved by someone who was a leftist. There's no fairness to it. There's no, it's arbitrary.
We must be a tightly knit sweater.
Yeah, a tightly knit sweater. I like that.
May I add something?
Yes.
The governor's ball is coming up soon, and I'd like to get out there with some other people and hold up signs that say, Oregonians want to keep their water. Don't give our water to Nestle. And I think foundation, we have to hold on to every drop of water we've got, because eventually we may arrive at kind of a polite separatist realm where we do have still natural resources and better determination by the people, for the people, and that might be the best that we can achieve. So we have to think about, you know, regional resource bases, and of course water is sacred. So that's my opinion.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to riff on solidarity a little more. I come online on the broadcast and I say Black Lives Matter, because none of this is possible. None of this organization, none of the Organization Against Global Warming, for example, is possible while we are divided. Black Lives Matter, we must acknowledge this and all that it means. The ICE facility, the ICE no habeas corpus dungeon on Bancroft and McAdam in Portland, it must be shut down and opened up. These are our people. We must show solidarity. They are people, therefore they are our people. Stay tuned to KBOO Portland coming up. We've got Per Fogring, He's going to welcome Robert Perry, the investigative journalist best known for his coverage of Iran-Contra. At 10 o'clock, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. 11 o'clock, Between the Covers, David Naiman. And thanks for listening to KBOO Portland. We're going out to you via 90.7 FM and other frequencies on our terrestrial transmitters in Cascadia and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Hay Fever, produced by the Portland Actors Conservatory and running from December 2nd to December 18th. In Hay Fever, the Bliss family have all invited house guests for the weekend. Artistic eccentricity and flirtation are misinterpreted and hilarity ensues. Again, that's Hay Fever, produced by the Portland Actors Conservatory and running December 2nd to December 18th. The play takes place at 1436 Southwest Montgomery Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the home page under Community Events.
Well, good morning. The show is Fight the Empire, and this is Pair 5.